Hi guys, welcome to our new episode on Pride Month. So I'm going to introduce myself first. I'm a new host and I haven't hosted before. And so my name is Austin Collings. My pronouns are he, him. I'm from Tucson, Arizona. I identify as bisexual. I am a cisgender male. And my primary Chick-fil-A replacement would probably be Cane's because they have the best sauce in the world. And that's a no doubter. And one of my celebrity crushes is Chris Evans because he has America's ass, as they said in the movies. Anyways, here goes Sophia.
That is a really great why. I don't think that our listeners really needed a why. I think just saying Chris Evans would be enough, but thank you anyway. So, you guys have heard me on a few episodes before, but I am Sophia and my pronouns are she, her. I'm from Miami, Florida. I identify as a lesbian. I am a cisgendered female, and my primary Chick-fil-A replacement is definitely Popeyes. I think that the regular chicken sandwich is like phenomenal. Honestly, I think it's up to par with Chick-fil-A for different reasons, but I'm done with Chick-fil-A. This Pride Month, I officially broke up with Chick-fil-A. We're done with them. And my celebrity crush is Lorde. Gabriel, your turn.
Awesome. So, hey there, everyone. You've recently heard me on the Juneteenth episode, and I am back. My name is Gabriel. My pronouns are he, him. I'm from Orlando, Florida, but originally from Highland Park in California. My sexuality is I am a gay trans man. That kind of went with my gender identity. And my primary Chick-fil-A replacement is probably KFC or Kentucky Fried Chicken because I'm obsessed with popcorn chicken. And then majority of my family would get that Nashville hot. Ugh, it's a whole mess. And my celebrity crush is definitely Michael B. Jordan.
I would have to agree, Gabriel. I think Michael B. Jordan is so hot, including when he was in Black Panther, definitely. And so to start us off, I'm gonna give like my own definition of queer liberation that I put together from other definitions. And so I would define it as a social and political movement of queer people that emphasizes the deconstruction of the status quo of a hetero and cisnormative society and a creation of an intersectional inclusive society. And just a quick disclaimer to all our listeners, much of this talk is through a Western and Americanized lens. And to start us off, we'll have Gabriel, and he will talk about the history of queer liberation.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So, as we know, the point of everything that has gone on started with Stonewall and the Stonewall riots, which happened in June 28th, 1969. And it started with our beautiful leaders, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. Now, we usually talk about Marsha P. Johnson a lot. She is well known, especially in these last couple of months and the last year with 2020 and the pandemic. We all learned about everything she's done and how amazing she is. She is the leader of the Stonewall Riot and a co-founder of STAR, which is Straight Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, which sheltered young transgender people, sex workers, Black trans women. She was a Black trans woman, and she was the one to throw the first glass at the police on that fateful night. But there is also Sylvia Rivera. She is a Latina trans woman. She is Puerto Rican and Venezuelan. She is the co-founder of STAR, and she was a sex worker starting at age 11 when she ran away from home. She was the second bottle toss at Stonewall, and she has stated before that this was not her first fight. Before gay rights, before the Stonewall, she was involved in the Black Liberation Movement and the Peace Movement. So this was not her first rodeo, and she knew exactly how to handle the police and exactly how to help run what was going on at that moment. And not only that, but she also fought against the exclusion of transgender people from the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act in New York right before she died in 2002, which means that we as people of the LGBTQ community cannot be discriminated in our workplace, and not only that, but making sure trans people cannot be excluded in their workplace. But immediately after Stonewall, the Gay Activist Alliance was formed, and it was in response to Stonewall. But it frequently rejected the role of transgender people, who were the majority of the ones who started this entire fight. So it was just truly insane to see our own people exclude one another, which goes into the modern day queer liberation, which is we are still fighting for trans rights and we are still fighting for our right to live in a world that still doesn't really accept us. And we still have to fight for the discourse that goes on in our own community and we have to demand more. That is what is going to be modern day queer liberation. That is how we are going to pursue what is happening.
Yes, exactly, Gabriel. And, you know, both Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera died relatively young. Sylvia Rivera died in her early 50s, and Marsha P. Johnson died far younger. And, you know, it's speculated that she may have been murdered. Her death was ruled a suicide, but it was honestly a little bit sketchy, and it wasn't looked into very much because of the transphobia that is so inherent in our society. So, you know, I just think it's really important to drive home that queer liberation needs to include trans people. And I think that's something that the queer community, the LGBTQ community, has been like slacking on over the course of the last 50 years, as we've been trying to gain equality for cisgendered gays and lesbians and bisexuals. It seems like we're leaving out our transgender brothers and sisters, and that's something that we really need to work on and that we need to change.
I would like to add on to that. We can see this with attacks against our own trans brothers and sisters when there's numerous laws being passed in multiple states across the country where trans people are being excluded from playing sports, from being able to talk about queer history in classrooms. We just need to be together as a coalition and come together and fight against this transphobia and homophobia. And with that, everybody knows about Pride, about Pride festivals and Pride parades across the country. I've personally never been to a Pride parade, but there's been much discussion within the queer community about whether there should be kink at Pride. And while I personally believe, since kink represents a rejection of heteronormative ideals of society, I also believe that there should be spaces for young queer people to engage at Pride.
I agree with you, Austin. I definitely think that younger members of the community should have their own spaces to be able to celebrate their queerness and to meet other queer people in a space that is appropriate, like age appropriate, that doesn't have kink, that doesn't have, I won't be graphic here, but some other things that may not be appropriate for younger audiences. But on the other hand, I can appreciate the kink that is present at Pride, because I believe that Pride is meant to make people uncomfortable. Like, the whole concept of Pride is celebrating what people have perceived as gross and unnatural for thousands of years in this society, in Western society. It's just been perceived as disgusting. And, you know, as people are becoming more comfortable with, you know, cisgendered white male gay couples, I still think that we have kind of a responsibility to make heteronormative society feel uncomfortable, you know, so that we have the space to celebrate ourselves and to be seen, but to still reject that sort of society, even if it's dramatic, even if it seems dramatic. I think that everything should be welcomed at Pride, because we are there to be who we are and not to appeal to society.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. We just basically, we need spaces for young queer people and an 18 plus Pride.
I think we can all agree on that, but I do think it's an interesting discussion and an interesting debate. And, you know, we would love to hear your takes on it, our dear listeners. We would love to hear your takes on our Instagram at TSVpod. We will have a post about this, and you can comment your thoughts below. Because it is really interesting to hear what people have to say and their different perceptions of how Pride should exist within heteronormative society.
And with that, we'll move into our next topic, which is about certain discourses within the own queer community. And as a person, as a bisexual person, I've definitely had experiences with biphobia from my own community. And basically, I'll put it a quick definition for our viewers, our listeners that don't know what biphobia is, and this is a quick Wikipedia. It's an aversion towards bisexuality and bisexual peoples as individuals, and usually it takes in the form of denial that bisexuality is even a genuine sexual orientation. And I would say a lot of the times people doubt that I am bisexual, or like people will think, oh, you're just gay, Austin, you're just doubting that you're gay. And I would say, no, I'm not. Meanwhile, I might have a preference towards men. I still love women, and I have attraction towards certain women. And a lot of the times, due to this belief that bisexual women are just straight or that bisexual men are just gay, there's a lot of erasure in the community, and there's not a lot of genuine exploration and representation of bisexuals within the community.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, Austin. You know, I have seen a lot of bi erasure, like on social media towards bisexual creators on TikTok or bisexual influencers. And I honestly think it's part of what we were kind of discussing before with kink at Pride, in the sense that I guess bisexuality, it questions heteronormative society. Like, it pushes the boundaries of heteronormative society, because now you're confusing them. You're not just attracted to men. You're not just attracted to women. You're attracted to both or all. And that, you know, that starts to attack gender constructs. And you know, once those sorts of things are questioned and quote unquote attacked, then people start to feel uncomfortable and they start to repel and reject it. And I do think once, just as we have an obligation to defend our trans brothers and sisters, we also have an obligation to stand up for the bisexual members of our community. And, you know, because bisexual people do exist, people do have attraction to both men and women. And if people don't understand that, whatever, but they still have to respect it. Everyone has to respect everyone.
Thank you, Sophia, for that amazing take. And I would just like to reference this one great infographic I've seen on Instagram. It comes from the @ Why Don't We Discuss, and it lists great myths about bisexuals. And if you have a chance, I would recommend you go check it out if you have any questions about bisexuals and bisexuality. And we'll include it in the resources down below when you listen to this video. And on top of that, I know many people have questions regarding bisexuality and pansexuality, because pansexuality seems like bi, which means two, but bisexuality can mean two or more. We can have attractions to males and female, or men and women, men, women, and non-binary. We can have attraction to two or more genders. But while pansexuality, that's just an attraction to everyone. They don't have a preference. So with bisexuals, I personally have a preference towards men. But with pansexuals, there is no preference. They just like people based on their own personality.
I've also heard from other bisexual, pansexual people that one of the key differences is that when you're bisexual, you see gender and you can kind of differentiate, like, I'm attracted to a man, or I'm attracted to a woman, or I'm attracted to someone who identifies as non-binary. But when you're pansexual, you don't see that gender. It's irrelevant to you. When you're looking for a romantic partner, or when you're attracted to someone, it just is, their gender is just irrelevant. You're just attracted to them for who they are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sophia. They pansexuals don't see any gender. They just see personality. Well, I might take into account a person's gender before I start liking them.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad we got to have a discussion about that. I mean, another quick disclaimer, none of us here identify as pansexual. So we're just saying this to educate our listeners, but none of us do have personal experience with being pansexual. So take that with a grain of salt. I do like to bring that up just because I don't want to speak on behalf of anyone, but you know, we also, our purpose is also to educate. So we would like to educate to the best of our ability. And we have our lovely bisexual Austin here who can help us out with the bisexual discourse. So yeah, that's another quick disclaimer. And I also want to move into another discussion that is debated within and outside of the community, which is, how does everyone feel about the commercialization of Pride? And I want to ask the other two here on the podcast with me.
I have done my own tidbit of research on rainbow washing, and you know, it's really easy to see. Now, commercialization is strong ever since the creation of it, but is one of the most strongest during Pride and during Pride Month. A way that this is true is because of something called rainbow washing. Rainbow washing in media and in commercialization and corporations is, in its most simplest term, a tactic for corporations to gain more capital, or in another sense, just to make more money. It is extremely easy to identify this in that most corporations who use rainbow washing simply just slap a rainbow on there on either their logo or products, or put in some type of sale for it, if they even put a sale. But most corporations who do this would be Coca-Cola, Walmart, AT&T, Tumblr, any single corporation that you see with the rainbow somewhere. Now, this is extremely harmful. This is because rainbow washing is a form of performative activism, meaning that even though they put the front that they care about our community, they truly don't. It's marketing, not allyship. There is a way to combat rainbow washing, which is always doing research before you put money in their pocket. Make sure to ask the question, does my money actually go to the community, or is this just a facade? Not only that, but buy from actual people in the community. Look for small businesses, queer businesses, and especially queer people of color businesses. Make sure that you're supporting the actual community and don't fall for the tricks of corporations that they tend to pull up their sleeves every single day.
Very well said, Gabriel. And we're going to go ahead and put some links to some of these queer small businesses, queer POC small businesses, in our resources that is in the description of this podcast. So that way you can support them yourselves, because that's really what it means to support the LGBTQ community during Pride Month. You know, it's not just saying like, oh, Coca-Cola, who already has a lot of money, let's just give them more money because they said they don't hate gay people. I don't know. It all feels very performative to me. And quick little promo, if you want more performative activism, that is one of our previous episodes that I was a host on. It's pretty awesome. I think it's two episodes, actually. So if you want to go ahead and check that out, please do. This is kind of a switch from what I have just been saying for like the last minute or so. But I feel like I don't hear the take on the commercialization of Pride that I'm about to give right now, which is that sometimes it's kind of nice to see some representation, even if it's in the large corporations. Like, I don't know, like when I first came out, I found it, I kind of liked it, you know, like I did buy the BS t-shirts with the rainbow flags on them and the rainbow logo. Like it did actually, like it made me feel proud to see the integration of like the LGBTQ community and the Pride flag on brands that, you know, I had seen it and bought from and buy from. I don't know, like it means something to be integrated like that. And I don't know, I'd love to hear from you guys if I'm alone on this, but I definitely did feel that sort of inclusivity that maybe I'd been lacking before Pride kind of exploded on a larger scale. You know, of course, as far as money goes, yes, please support small businesses. But I also think that like it's important to acknowledge that it does, like the commercialization of Pride does like commercialize Pride in the sense that it's everywhere. You see the rainbow flag everywhere. And sometimes it's kind of nice to see.
That's a really good take on it. But me being a slight bit of a pessimist, I just don't know if I could see it in that sense, because knowing that Walmart gives money to politicians like Mitch McConnell who are actively making sure that we don't have rights or that we don't have a safe space in the country that we live in, it's just, it's like a false sense of hope of like, yay, it's me. And they're like, oh wait, they're ruining my life. Not only that, but it's just something like, it's a false sense of security and a false sense of protection within itself. And it's just not one that I'm not the most comfortable in, because you can sense that they're just lying to you straight in your face, like taking candy from a baby, except it's taking the rights of us away from each other and dividing us in that own sense.
That is true. I do see that point, but I don't know. I guess it's the it was the deception that I found so appealing, that it was like, oh, look, they're supporting queer people. And then, like, of course, once you do more research, you see, you know, why they're doing it, obviously, to make a profit. And you see that they're being hypocritical about it. You know, is that money really going towards a queer organization? Like, do you really know what's happening behind the scenes? So yeah, I think, you know, it's okay. I want to make other people feel like it's okay to be happy about the representation that you see during Pride Month, but to also acknowledge that it may not be everything that you think it is, and that a better way to support queer people during Pride Month is, of course, by supporting small businesses.
I definitely get that. It's just scary to think that they're trying to, you know, make us palatable to the mainstream of what's going on within our corporations. Like, we can tell one another that we're okay. We are the safe space that we need for one another. Like, we are just kids taking care of each other.
I definitely agree with both points of your guys' takes. When I first came out, I thought it was pretty encouraging to see, like how Sophia said, like, oh, some companies, you know, they put up like that pride flag. And, you know, it felt like, oh, maybe there's some sort of support out there. But like, as I've grown older, I've done research, as Sophia said, and I would agree with Gabriel that they don't truly support us. You know, if they truly supported us, they would not be donating all this money. I found this great article from The Guardian, and there's this new study that said 25 corporations, including Comcast, Verizon, CVS, and Walmart, they have that they like to like dawn on like the gay pride, but they have donated over $10 million to anti-LGBTQ politicians, including some politicians in Texas that have changed this child state abuse law that would make it a crime for parents to allow their children to get gender affirming medical care. And so I think we need to take a very strenuous look at all these companies and analyze and make sure, are they actually supporting us? And I definitely believe the best way to support Pride is to support small local businesses, small local queer businesses. And those are the ones that truly put in the effort.
And I just want to add that the article that Austin is referencing is in the description of our podcast, so you can read up on it if you would like.